Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host
Dino.
I know you had said from the 2016 feedback for Polycast that you didn't want to only be on the show when you were replacing replacing a regular
welcome,
co-host.
Gab.
But I'm so replacing welcome. Guest host.
Now you're replacing a guest. You're welcome.
I'm like, the second I saw that, I'm like, oh, I know what you're doing right now. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 277. My name is Dino. And today I'm joined by regular co-host Dan Q.
Marching to my own drum.
Makalua.
When where we go wrong.
The Mian Team.
It's like those cities were never there at all.
And Mad Jin.
Just like Dino's invite to be here.
No, we gave him a proper invitation like at least minutes prior to the show. At least 10
Dino
minutes.
Still has not been properly invited to host the show. I'm still protesting now.
I know. I well,
he said he didn't want to replace
host.
A regular, and he's not replacing regular.
I'm
yes,
replacing
he is, actually.
Guest host today.
He's replacing somebody. He wasn't actually invited.
No. He said he didn't want to only replace regular co-host, and today he's not replacing a regular co-host.
Yep, that's right.
Technically, this is true.
He's our favorite reserve co-host.
And technically true is the best kind of true, right?
Yes, it is.
With some quote-unquote unmentioned changes in the Australian summer patch, and to be fair, they have been mentioned a lot, so there were changes that just weren't written down initially that people found. Appeal got nerfed, and by nerfed, it's more that they implemented a negative appeal for mines and quarries, because seriously, who likes to go live next to a mine or a quarry? Less appealing. And extra appeal from cliffs were removed, which is kind of weird, but whatever. Apparently, the rampaging scouts will now catch your civilian unit. The scout who goes wandering around will no longer ignore your workers and your settlers that you walk beside them, because before they used to just totally ignore them. Now they'll take them out. Plus, scouts will actually rampage, and other stuff will rampage. Once you take out their barb camp, the barbs definitely will want to get you for that. Apparently, luxury deals are more favorable in the early game. You can charge up to 160 gold for one instead of 130 early on. Still don't think that should be a thing, but
there's still the issue, though, that if you have multiple copies of luxuries, some AIs will gladly purchase multiple copies of the same resource. Mm-hmm. Now, if they're trying to set up something where they're trying to act like as a middleman and then they turn around and sell it to someone else for a profit, that would be impressive, but I don't think that's what's going on. So that I kind of view it as like if you have multiple sources of chocolate, well, they want your dark chocolate and they want your milk chocolate and they want your gluten-free chocolate and all this other crap. So and yes, I
like how you
threw
in the gluten-free chocolate, even though chocolate is gluten-free to begin with.
I was going to say, if your chocolate has gluten in it, it's called a chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah.
No, this is this current trend. We have to market things that have always been gluten-free as gluten-free if we want people to have it. Come on.
It's already
marketed as paleo.
Patella Palace, Big Ben, and Alhambra finally work. So if you capture them, you get their policy card now. So that's a bug fix.
Wiseman's comment in the thread on Civ Fanatics. I wonder, does it remove it from the other Civ?
I would hope so. If it doesn't, that's another bug.
That's the kind of bug that can turn into exploit territory by repeatedly selling the city back and forth, if it were a bug that way.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Or even just, like, everybody on the team, just trade it so that everybody on the team gets the slot.
Yeah, I mean, who wants infinite slots in this category? Let's go.
Yay!
Woo!
Bombers and jets. Bombers were melee strength were nerfed, but the bombard strength was buffed, and the production cost increased. And you can no longer heal land units in the water. Well, I guess that makes sense. Here, stay here and tread water. Feel better.
I don't think people are, like, swimming across the ocean when they're embarked, but yeah. I don't really care about that.
Reinforcements in the middle of the water.
Yeah, fair enough.
and when sending out a boat full of new people that are going faster than you to, you know, catch up. And of course, the swordsman melee strength got buffed by +5. As previously stated, that was a bug fix.
That probably should have made its own entry in the patch notes. So it is pretty significant to the early game because of how they stack up the cities now versus previously.
Oh, not even just cities, actually.
And other units.
Yeah, no one actually brought it up in the thread because there's a whole thread about this and people kept saying it was a bug and they were wrong. It's a balance change, but the thing is, the balance change is wrong because the base swordsman being up at 40 means that they are equivalent to the pike. And since swords already get an extra +10, that means that something from the classical era can wreck something from the medieval era and have more combat strength to spare before any promotions or land or anything else on top of that. So yeah, there's a balance point that is completely and utterly wrong in there.
Is that confirmed bugs? Because the previous titles had something like that, where previous era units had higher... Well, yeah, but it depends how it plays out, right? Because knights and Sifor were stronger than muskets, but...
Well, the balance point up to this point was that swords versus pikes were about the same. Like, at 35, they get the +10, which puts them at 45, which means that they're on par with a pikeman standing in rough terrain on defense. So the pikeman would be able to stand up to a sword if it's on defense. That was there. And then, of course, knights were balanced versus pikes and yada, yada, yada. This putting them up by 5 to hit the 40 level means that swordsmen just run over pikes, and pikes are the thing that are meant to stick around for 2 eras, not swords. Swords
Fair
get upgraded
enough.
To gunpowder. Which
Although I feel like
then,
the spear line is weak in general, just overall.
The whole thing is just wrong.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason it might be like that, too, is because technically with the swordsmen, you do need that iron in order to build them, where the pikes you don't. So it might be a little bit of a balance thing there, too.
Well, it's a balance thing that's missing, then. Because even in Civ 5, where there was a strategic resource thing, you still did build your pikes as your main thing, because they would get ran over by longswords.
Yeah.
If you're going to say, okay, longswords beat pikes, then you have to say that longswords only beat pikes when you're going against pikes, and therefore they should have a lower base combat strength than the pike, and then get like a big bonus versus them. And then make sure that they're extra rare as well. You don't want a situation where you're like, well, I have lots of pikes, and then, ooh, you've got 2 longswords, I'm going to go squish your pikes now. And on top of that, since gunpowder units pop up really quickly after pikes and still get the bonus versus pikes, that's even worse, because that is so far beyond reality. When gunpowder units came out, they really, really didn't have a chance versus pikes.
I feel like the unit progression scaling in the tech has been off, really, in all the recent Civ games, yeah.
Claiming it's modeling a later version, except that later version is stuff like the rifling tech, which is much later, and has its own unit.
It's like saying they had rifling in 1300 or something. It's absurd. There's a thread about how Civ 6 is maybe gender biased.
What?
Yeah, there is a thread on that. I saw the title and I'm like, this is clickbait. I'm not.
Have they not, you know, ever played a Civ game?
Apparently not.
Have they not read history and realized that history is gender biased? We mostly only hear about the male leaders.
Oh, yes. Okay, so it's a person who has gendered themselves as female. Let's see.
This might be like a total troll thread, like start to finish. You never know.
Yeah, totally. Played Civ 5 for a couple of years. I loved that it was able to choose science, arts, or diplomacy to win. Felt terrible destroying barbarian villages. Took them a good 50 games to realize that the barbarians could not be reasoned with no matter what Civ type was pursued. Kept trying to leave them to their own devices. And why not grant them land?
Okay, barbarians
they
are.
I wish my distant ancestors made this deal with Aboriginal people. Oh, God. I like that it could keep a sensible defensive force while focusing on science, blah, blah, blah. Waging wars makes me uncomfortable. Hated the mods for this reason, never got more than 70% of the badges. Trying other games made me feel that at least the Civ product accommodated a female. Rational. What?
Well,
those are 2 words. Perspective.
Well.
Okay. Of rationality over war. I'm sorry. If you believe that the female perspective is rational, therefore the male wants to be war is irrational.
Ginger has nothing to do whether you can rationalize or not.
Or war.
Well, being rational is different from rationalizing as well.
Yeah, that too. Played several Civ 6 games that underwhelmed. Everything but war is harder to work towards. Okay. Game is slowly losing interest. Barbarians are so much more powerful and prolific that my efforts to create a balanced Civ are utterly sorted. I'm happy that they spent Aussie bucks.
I have to say, though, if this was an intentional troll thread, I am impressed.
Oh, no,
if this is somebody who's just like, hey, I'm going to write this just to see how much clickbait and how much I can mess with people and made this thread, I would applaud that.
Okay, I would agree if it is.
If
it's tagged not for chicks, which is great.
The post is inconsistent. I would not make assumptions about this person's motivations.
I think they're just annoyed by our barbarians and should turn them off.
Yeah. Then you can say to yourself, well, that's because our civilization makes deals with barbarians. That's why we don't have barbarian problems. Use a little imagination.
Oh, and then it gets better because the thread goes on. Because Eagle Pursuit said it was sexist to claim that rationality over violence is inherently female.
Oh, boy.
Thank you, Eagle Pursuit. Venlis said that they were confusing gender and sex, which is true. Like, why are games geared towards violence? Let's look at their gross market way. My point was, gender-identified females want games too. Well, no shit. And there's a lot of actual females who play Civ.
Hi, I'm right here.
And even with the other stuff, you can still claim maybe it was a troll thread or at least something to purposely troll to start a conversation, and then somebody's real account could pop in and talk about stuff that they wanted to talk about.
So Civ 6, governments. We have a lot of them now.
Chiefdom for life. No kidding.
If you want to limit yourself to 2 slots, feel free.
Challenge run.
Yeah. Just the 1 military, 1 economic. Go, go, go.
It's organized into 3 eras. They just have different amounts of...
Oh, 3 basic categories that progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Varying amounts of military, economic, diplomatic slots, and wild card ones. I forgot those. Because you don't normally get them until later.
Well, you get them at classical. Yeah, once you've got political philosophy, then you've got wild card.
Yeah, the first,
yeah, and that's something you usually go for pretty early, I would imagine. I go for it reasonably early.
Oh, yeah.
I guess because sometimes I end up using the wild card slot for other normal stuff and not one of the wild card things like putting great people points or something in it.
It's also right there in the middle of any path you want to take. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Getting more slots is better than no slots.
What do we have at political philosophy? What are our choices?
You can go autocracy, which is 2 military, 1 economic, and a wild card slot. Capital receives a +1 boost to all yields, and you have a +10 bonus to wonder production. It does have a legacy bonus that it says every blank turns, and I'm thinking that has to do with the game length, but you get a +1% bonus to wonder production. So sure. I guess it depends on the type of game you're trying to play. Not everybody is building wonders quite that early.
It's odd to have that with 2 military policy slots, then.
Yeah, I was surprised it wasn't like an extra diplomatic slot for that.
Nah, well, it wouldn't be a diplomatic slot for building.
Yeah.
Really, the design of autocracy versus oligarchy, because, well, you always choose classical republic.
Nope.
Pick all the design of those two are just a little weird.
Yeah, so seeing as we're talking about oligarchy, what is the card number breakdown, and then what are the effects and what the legacy bonuses of oligarchy?
Well, that one is the one that's actually 1-1-1 of each of those, and plus it's a wild card. All combat units gain +4 strength, +20% bonus experience for units, and an additional 1% bonus experience for units every 5 turns. Yeah, I use this multiplayer all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that way, if you want to beat people up, and that diplomacy slot is totally worth it.
There's where I'm confused. Yeah. Why is this? Yeah, those two need to be flipped. It would make sense for this one with the emphasis on combat to have the 2 combat slots.
And less diplomacy?
Yeah.
Less diplomacy.
This is not about diplomacy. This one is about beating people in the face.
Yeah. And this really is a good beat stick pick. Because you can stack that +4, and if you want to push out a great general early, it's pretty impressive what you can do mowing crap down, especially against the AI. You're running like +9 or more on your base melee units with a battering ram rolling up on a city. The AI did not handle this well.
And well, if you're playing on deity, that +4 from oligarchy wipes out the AI bonus.
Unless they run it too.
Well, yes, but if they don't, then you've negated their bonus.
Yep. I'm used to playing there. The AI just gets itself caught out so much. It's fine.
Also, in context, a 10-point combat strength difference is at least a third of the health gone.
Yeah.
Once you get up somewhere about 28-ish combat strength difference between two units, it's 100% wipe.
And you can get a good way towards that. Like, you run promotions in addition to this bonus and a great general, and you are well set for just bashing.
Yeah, because a lot of promotions are plus 10s.
Yeah.
So if you've got plus 19, you're really close. You get good terrain.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to kill a unit like that in two hits.
Yep. Although, that probably shouldn't be a thing, but still. No.
That's the design of the game, though. And you are investing a lot if, like, you're pushing out an early great general, too, or doing something like that. Like, you need to succeed in war, or you're going to be behind. Yeah,
that is true.
But yeah, for me, for classical, it comes down a choice between classical republic or oligarchy, and it's usually what we haven't talked about yet, classical republic, unless, someone's beating me with a stick, or I want to beat them with a stick at this point in time.
Yeah, if you run into a neighbor that you know you've got to squish early.
Yes.
So you go and you squish them, and then you switch to Classical Republic. Or you just do Classical Republic full stop, because you have a neighbor to squish, but you're not worried about doing that right now.
And in the meantime...
we've got a serial stomper here. A serial squisher.
Yeah, because that one has two economic and one diplomatic. All the cities with the district receive plus one amenity. Well, that'll help you with happiness. Plus 15% bonus to great people point generation, and an additional 1% bonus to the great people point generation every 15 turns. So if you wanted to run up that great profit faster or great anything faster.
Great scientist
or,
faster.
Hey, straight up, here's an amenity so you can expand faster.
Mm-hmm, that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're limited by them, depends on your terrain and how much you can settle before.
I've seen crap tons of maps where the starting amenities are like one. Or maybe two, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get a lot of variants. You can get that kind of situation. You can get housing problems where you actually have enough bonus amenity resources where you're worried about housing first.
Yeah, if you have more amenities than you have housing, you got a problem. Yeah. That exists too. I've seen starts where it's like, boom, here's your start, and you look around and like, where's the fucking water? No water for you. None.
Oh, yes, and of course, to confirm, wild card means military or economic or diplomatic.
Whatever you feel like.
Whatever you feel like. Get or great person wild generation.
Really use them.
Yeah, get extra bonus points to great person generation with classical republic, where you get great bonus points to great people generation. Go bonus points to great people generation.
Do you like great people point generation?
So, in medieval era, does anybody actually run monarchy, like, ever?
Well, I do if I need to get into castles quick.
Merchant Republic.
All right, so actually, first off, let's talk about in medieval Renaissance, of course, you had six slots. Let's talk about the one that we haven't identified yet, which is theocracy. What's theocracy about?
Two military, two economic, one diplomatic, and one wild card. You can buy land combat units with faith instead of having that as part of your religion. All units gain plus 5 strength in theological combat, so you can tell all the other religions to get off your lawn. And 15% discount on faith purchases, plus it's a legacy. You get an additional 1% discount on faith purchases every 15 turns. Eh?
Yeah.
That can matter. Basically, like,
it matters
a
lot.
Make use of this, like, it should be obvious that you should go here. Like, if you've invested into the religion and built that up, there really won't be much doubt by the time this becomes available that you should be running this. And otherwise, you should be in Merchant Republic.
Well, even if you didn't bother making a religion, but you have, like, a crap ton of faith income, theocracy is better than Merchant Republic at that point. Just because
I'm not sure.
No, it's because the faith cost for units is cheaper than the gold cost. You don't have any other item requiring faith for purchase other than, say, the random missionary or apostle. Unlike gold, which has, well, units and buildings and hexes and yada, yada, yada. There's lots. You can run a completely massive faith-based economy if you crank up the faith. And then because the discount for faith, and as it goes in an extra 1% for every few turns, your faith buying of great people gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper to the point where it's like, I've got a mass of faith and I'm just going to buy every single last great person every couple turns.
the great people is nice. You can't, like, just go around buying buildings with it all the time. I guess my issue with this is if you're in single player, you just don't lose units that often. You don't need to build that many units, in my experience, even on D&D.
Well, even in multiplayer, a Mass Faith war machine is better than Merchant
Republic. Well, I would argue more strongly for it in multiplayer than single player, because you actually need to build more units to win Domination.
Even in single player, you get around the whole production thing. Like, you don't need production.
But, like, by that point, I have a decent core of units already. I don't need that many more to supplement. Even if I'm on the warpath, I don't need that many more. I just don't. I have good trade routes set up already. I'm conquering stuff. I have, like, 6+ good frontline units with range support. Like, why do I care? Like, I could face by more units, but...
It's just a different style of play, because you can get to Theocracy pretty fast if you go that route.
Yeah, Theocracy, Reformed Church, as opposed to Merchant Republic at Exploration. I like Merchant Republic, because I can use my gold to get around my production problem.
Monarchy, on the other hand, it's the one no one likes.
What do we get a Monarchy? And then we'll...
military slots, one economic, one diplomatic, one wild card. It's +2 housing in any city with medieval walls, +20% bonus influence points, and the legacy is an additional 1% bonus influence points every 10 turns.
So that one's, in theory, if you were, say, really up on trying to keep up with the city-states, plowing into city-state points, then yes, you should, in theory, go monarchy, but...
But you only get one diplo slot still, so then you have to use your wild card for the other one.
Well, I usually do that anyways, even with Classical Republic.
Yeah.
It's less diplomatic than it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I would think that the monarchy one, that maybe if you go 2 military, 1 economic, 2 diplomatic, and 1 wildcard.
I think that would be a better representation,
Because monarchy comes online roughly about the time that the other diplomatic policies pop in. And you would think monarchy would be the one that would want to take advantage of that. What they're really saying is that they didn't put enough diplomacy policy cards into the game early. More diplomacy cards early than a monarchy switch to having one extra diplomacy slot would make a lot more sense. Monarchy doesn't need 3 military slots.
No. Merchant Republic, 1 military slot, 2 economic slots. Very.
This episode is about counting on the internet.
We can't count on the internet.
1 diplomatic and 2 wildcard slots. Yeah, that's the fun part.
Yep, 2 wildcard slots, Merchant Republic wins. Okay, moving on.
Yeah. We haven't finished with how much win it has.
It's purely economic.
Oh,
+2 trade routes, 15% discount on gold purchases, and the legacy is an additional 1% discount on gold purchases every 15-ish turns or so.
And yes, indeed, if you switch away from Merchant Republic and you're using those extra 2 trade routes, guess what? They go away.
Surprise. It would be pretty broken if they didn't, because you could make a very temporary stay in Merchant Republic, use your trade routes, then leave.
The 2 trade routes, first and foremost, yes, awesome. But then the discount on gold purchases initially, and then the discount purchases as you continue to go on. It's like, I'm going to construct these districts, you know, with the whatever crap production I have, plus the whole issue about district costs, scaling,
But then I get to buy all the buildings that go in them.
Then I'll buy all the buildings, and then I'll buy the units. And then time goes on, the unit's cheaper. Okay, great. Bye. Oh, I need to upgrade? Oh, yeah. Okay, I've got money for that, thanks to the discount and the trade routes as well. It just feeds into so much of everything else. It's a wonderful bypass for production.
It may only be economic, but it feeds into so many other things.
Yep.
Trade routes are just good in general.
Drool.
Yeah. I'm okay with there being alternate paths and alternate economies. It's just a little too much right now. It's less the alternate economy and more the core economy.
Yeah.
It stands out on its strength on its own, as well as the issues with Monarchy and Theocracy.
Yeah.
What we've talked about, there's not that many changes that could be done, and all of a sudden the other ones start looking better.
Yeah, there's nothing new they have to add. They just have to shift some things around.
Yeah, I mean, if to balance it out, I'd say Merchant Republic should lose the wild card and, like...
Yeah, give them the extra economic.
Give them an economic.
Awesome.
Yeah.
1-3, 1-1.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely you're going to be focusing on it anyways, and generally when you go Merchant Republic, that's what you do with that extra wild card slot anyways.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind losing the wild card slot for even more economic slots.
You go to Merchant Republic, it's like, hey, look, I've got 4 economic slots. Like, now you got two workers. Now I've got four economic slots.
Modern era. Ooh, eight slots.
Yes, lots of slots. All the slots. First on the list, communism. Three military, three economic, one diplomatic, one wild card. Your land units gain plus four defense strength. 10% bonus on all production. And then additional plus one bonus every whatever turns to production.
So you get 3-3-1-1. Good. There is more militaristic policy slots that are more than just cheaper upgrade and cheaper unit cost and cheaper production. And basically, communism is kind of geared towards the science victory, sort of, because of the production requirements in science now.
Especially for the, if you want to get out of here, ship.
Yes.
Yep.
All production, any production, stomp face production, space production, production. There's democracy with its one military, three economic, two diplomatic, and two wildcard slots. Your patronage of great people costs 50% less gold, 30% bonus yields from district projects, and an additional 1% bonus yield from your district projects every blank turns. Well, obviously, with that many economic slots, that means you to make all the gold to buy all the great people with. And if you're coming from Merchant Republic,
Nope, there's only one right choice in this era. Fascism is the only correct choice in the modern era.
It's four military slots, one economic, one diplomatic, and two wild cards. All your combat units gain four combat strength, 20% bonus on unit production, and an additional 1% bonus on unit production every mystery turns.
Yeah, man, go in the game.
Yeah, so, I mean, comparing fascism to communism, yes, I realize the 10% bonus on all production in communism, but then the 20% bonus on unit production, if that's what you want, is unit production, then that's there. Okay, you lose, quote-unquote, the defensive strength, but you gain combat strength, and that's all of your units, not just the land units.
Yeah, and that counts for attack, too.
Yep. Fascism a little squished into that whole go kill stuff, but
end game for. Yeah.
Well, I guess end game needs to go squish stuff. So,
and it doesn't necessarily mean domination either.
No, it really does. stopping somebody from winning a different direction.
Well, that's what I mean, yes.
Once you've run everybody else ragged, you could probably back into any victory condition you feel like, technically. But you probably just want to win domination.
If you're already there, might as well just finish it.
What I'm saying is that it doesn't necessarily have to be that. It could be preventing somebody else from doing this. Like, I'm going to win domination, except you're going to win space first. No, you're not. Squish. This civ doesn't have a lot of units, but, oh my gosh, the defensive strength of these cities. Oh, crap, the encampments. Oh, gosh.
When they get up above 100? Oh, God.
It's like, oh, geez, yeah, okay. I need something to help me with that. Squish.
You can get late game stuff like mech infantry is so strong that the cities can't do anything to them, though.
I'd rather there be options on some unique versions of some of these governments. The core is still similar, but that they shift around some of the benefits a little bit. Maybe that's the expansion material eventually.
Yeah, unique governments to go along with the other uniques, sure. Based on Civ,
or some type of government. Because not all democracies are the same. And if you say, well, that's what the policy slots are for, like, no, it's not quite the same. The policies are kind of there, but not quite. But there's actual core fundamental differences between democracy types. Like, where's your republic? I don't see a republic there. Republics are not democracies.
Related to the government, of course, are all the different policy types. First off, by era, and then, of course, we'll go by type. So let's start with diplomatic in the ancient era, because, hey, there's the two here. We've got the Diplomatic League. The first envoy you send to each city-state counts as two envoys, or charismatic leader, plus two influence points per turn towards earning city-state envoys. So,
AKA the car that never leaves anyone's diplomatic slot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The only time it leaves is if I'm using the wild card slot for something else. I can't pull it out. So then, but that's when the diplomatic slot gets switched for the plus two for one. So it's okay because you're going to get two envoys rather than one for a turn. And then you switch it right back because you've obviously lined up your policies such that you can make a policy switch on one turn by finishing a civic and then jump to another civic to finish it to make the policy switch on the next turn.
Totally. I totally planned it that way. Yeah.
All good planning.
Speaking of the starting, so if we look at the economic policy types in the ancient era, your initial choices, plus one faith and plus one gold in the capital, or we could have plus one production in all cities. So that's God King and urban planning, respectively.
9 times out of 10, God King just to get the pantheon.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Unless I have a different source of faith, either be it tobacco or a city state or a relic or whatever, in which case production. The moment I have that pantheon, I
no longer need God King.
And then at that point, I usually also have hopefully something else.
Only switch to settler production when I'm building settlers. Only switch to builder production when I'm making those. And even then, plus one production might be worth more than the 30% increase in produced output.
Yeah, I typically find, though, that after God King, I got my Pantheon, all right, I want the plus two gold from all my trade routes.
The one trade route that you may or may not have yet.
Of course, this is when I have the trade route, and usually by the point that I have my Pantheon, I have a trade route. Whether it's internal or external, I have the trade route. Give me gold. But if you want to be able to go the mass out to get the settlers, I actually don't often do often much with the builders, but the 50% production towards the settler, that can be significant. But if my production is otherwise okay early on in the game, it's like, oh, it's going to be the difference between 5 turns and 6 turns or something like that, you know, online speed. And it's not a super race, whereas that plus two gold income, so now instead of getting, you know, like 4 or 5 a turn, that's, you know, now 6 or 7 a turn, that's pretty good.
No, for me, it's more about the other cities. Like, because if you assume that you're also going to have 2 to 3 to 4 cities pretty quick, it's a question of plus one production in those other cities outside of the capital versus the 30% boost to builder production inside the capital. Which one's going to get me more?
Mm-hmm. Probably, I would say, in that case, what's going to get you more is the builder. Because then you can send those builders out to those other cities.
Well, if I need the builders at the time. Sometimes I just need the capital to be producing other stuff than builders, at which point it still works out better. And sometimes it's all the other cities need is one more point of production to be able to get something built quickly in their own locations. If they're getting water mills really in new cities when they have it, then that'll get me to builders and stuff faster in those cities. Well, everything faster in those cities than if I get a builder going to the capital and try and trudge mass builders out there. Unless, of course, you're playing China, in which case builder, 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 builder. Wonder spam, wonder spam, wonder spam.
Yes, this.
By wonders, do you mean like swordsmen or knights?
We're going by the usual definition, not the Phil definition.
I mean, you could always go for the terracotta army.
So swordsmen?
Yeah. More promotions.
And then, of course, there's the ancient era economic policy that reduces the purchasing cost of tiles. It's the most situational, I would say, of all of them. It's not completely useless, but it's the one I'm least likely to use. And then in military, discipline, plus 5 unit strength when fighting barbarians, or survey, double experience for recon units. So, yeah, discipline. Unless you've disabled barbarians, so fine.
I'm like, I actually usually start with a survey until I explore a little bit, and then I switch over to discipline, like when I'm ready to go take out a barbarian camp.
It depends on whether or not the barbs are coming for you or you're going for the barbs.
Exactly.
If the barbs are coming to you, then yes.
Yes.
Guaranteed. Like, if you know that there's close barb camps, or there's a barb camp next to a horse, then yes, go straight for it with the plus five. If it's not a thing, and you actually choose to spam out multiple scouts, then the experience can make them better.
Classical era. Let's see. Classical era diplomatic policies. Oh, wait, darn it. that was easy. At economic. Oh, there's something about holy site district adjacency bonuses. Okay. Here we
district
go.
District adjacency bonus boosting is good. Those are good cards.
Well, it's a holy site thing. So, I mean, yeah, if you're going religion, then sure.
Depending on where you put your district, it's worth more than the building that you put into it.
Oh, yeah. See, I'm not poo-pooing the adjacency bonus. I'm poo-pooing that it's holy site. But then, of course, if we're talking classical military, then so you got stuff in there for strength, defensive buildings, yield pillaging, production towards Kamet districts and buildings, or medieval, Renaissance, industrial era heavy and light cavalry units. So, I actually don't adopt many of those classical ones. Oh, excluding the last one, sorry, that was me. But the other ones, yeah, they can be useful. But I don't find that I use really any of the military classical era policies.
Production,
next, hardly at all. The unit maintenance reduction by 1 gold per turn per unit. Oh my gosh. Yep. Yes, please. Adopt now.
It's also the please fill this slot and never leave.
Yep.
Unless I have other mass money choices.
But usually it's gone because now there's the one that's reduced maintenance by 2 and it takes its place. It's just...
Yeah, conscription, ancient era, unit maintenance reduced by 1 gold per turn per unit.
Well, one of the best economic policies in the game.
Yes, even though it's under military, it is, its effect is economic and it's substantial, yes.
Scales based on your military size, so...
Yep.
It is good, because if you go big military, then you get bigger boost.
Exactly, whether that's an offensive or a defensive one. Less maintenance, it's awesome. Diplomatic. Medieval. Plus one gold from each of your envoys at city-states and merchant confederation. I like that one. Now, am I going to switch to that over plus two influence? No. But as we go along in government types, seeing as how you're getting all these influence towards earning city-state envoys, and then you can get gold from all of those city-state envoys, then heck yeah.
Well, at some point when you get another diplomacy slot, that one's useful. What it usually happens card. Is I throw it in my
wild card.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's usually where it ends up. This is where deletion of that plus two influence card would be a good thing.
Yeah.
Make it disappear at this point. Therefore, now you have to make choices between what you're doing with those envoys versus getting more.
Then economic medieval, while of course there's these things about adjacency bonuses like the one for theater and industrial zone or harbor or commercial hub. Hi there. but I particularly like the plus one culture and the plus one science from international trade routes. I know there's the strength of the internal trade routes as well, but if you've got considerable external ones, particularly because, hi commercial city-state, yes, let me send a trade route to you, that one in particular, then, I can get plus one culture and plus one science from that trade route as well. Wow. Of course, this assumes that you've got more than just a couple of trade routes, admittedly, and if you don't, what's going on here?
Yeah. I don't know. I think there should be a refactoring of all the trade route related mechanics. Something's just wrong in there.
It influences your choices on a lot of this stuff. It has ripple effects.
Elsewise, from economic and medieval, two others I think worth pointing out. One, there's the Medina Quarter, which is plus two housing in all cities with at least specialty districts, which I use on occasion. And of course, there's also serfdom. Newly trained builders gain two extra build actions.
Ooh.
They can be useful as well, but it's usually, that's maybe what I'm going to put as a wild card slot, even if it's just temporarily, as opposed to, say, swapping out your plus 100% commercial hub district adjacency bonuses, town charters.
Yep. Of course, this is also the era where policy cards start getting obsoleted.
It's true.
As soon as you get serfdom rolling, your previous builder policy card goes away.
Then military, economic, we've alluded to this under the governments. Professional army, 50% discount on unit upgrades.
Pretty bad that there's a policy card out there that is like, I want to upgrade my units. 100% we'll always run this policy, period.
Yeah.
Because the cost is too prohibitive to not run it.
Yep. In a strategy game, when it's, you should almost always do this just because it is either the best because it's super great and or the other ones are super crap. Although I wouldn't say the other ones are super crap, but in this case, the bang for the buck is so amazing. And it's not something that you would run. As soon as I get that, the Mercenary Civic, I'm always going to have that as a gov policy. No, but it's an awesome one to be able to swap out.
Yeah.
There have been times where it's like, I really want to pursue this next Civic, but if I backfill to this other Civic, I'm going to have that, in one or two turns. And then not only can I upgrade my units, but I'm also thinking about, I don't have to worry about paying air quotes the penalty for unlocking it. But quite frankly, it can also be worth the penalty. It's like, it's going to cost me 50 to unlock it this turn. Yeah, but you're upgrading these units, and that's going to cost you more than the 50, and you could use that right now, because you're about to send your units out of their borders, and you're not going to be able to upgrade them otherwise. So, do that.
Okay, that's another thing that needs to change, too. But, okay, different concept.
Renaissance policy. Machiavellianism. Plus 50% production towards spies. Spy operations take 25% less time. Nothing against that policy. But the other ones that are available for a diplomatic, either use the diplomatic slot or the wild card, the number of spies I'm going to be able to get, first of all, and then what it is that they're able to do and how long it takes them to do it. Yeah, I realized this 25% last time. It's not a bad policy. It's just the spy mechanic for what I'm getting for it is just underwhelming.
We don't want to do another Burt thing with the spies where you just run your economy on spies.
Yeah, we need something between what we saw in Civilization Beyond Earth and what we had in Civilization 5 and Civilization 6. Although I think Civ 6 is definitely better than Civ 5. There's no question about that. It was kind of, why am I saying this? It went a little too far away from Burt. Never thought I'd even say that. It's mainline Civ, but I did it. I think it's kind of scary. economic. We've got stuff in here about faster growth in your cities. Plus 4 gold and plus 1 faith from all of your trade routes. Those are very nice. But you also have your 100% yield from, still with districts, plus 1 amenity in all cities with at least 2 specialty districts, plus 100% science from campus district buildings. Yeah, these ones right here, the 100% plus yield from the commercial hub district buildings and the campus district buildings, I'm swapping out for those. I mean, of course, this is assuming you have a pretty substantial empire, number one, so you've got multiple commercial districts, multiple campus districts, and you actually have those buildings in place. But even if you don't have all of them in place yet, as you get those online, that is incredible. So between those two and then the +4 gold and +1 faith from all of your trade routes, so whether that's internal or external, those are amazing. I will swap to those quite often as compared to, say, even the district adjacency bonuses, because that is going to give you typically more very quickly, even if you were really paying attention to the adjacency bonuses that you would get in the first place. Those
yeah,
are really
it's overwhelming.
Powerful.
And it scales up as you add more trade routes to your empire, which you can do through making districts.
Yeah.
It gets stupid quickly.
Yeah, there's definitely a point where new cities, it's like, okay, we're going to do the campus first, but then I'm going to buy all of the science buildings, and then I'm going to construct the commercial district, and I'm not going to be buying buildings that give you gold. I carry that over from previous Sims. You know you don't do that. It's, I'm going to buy all of those science buildings. While I'm buying the science buildings, it's constructing those buildings for the commercial hub, and then those go online, and then it allows me to buy more science buildings somewhere else, and or buy more units, and or buy, like, this, that, and the other thing you can see where we're... Commercial District 1, that's free market. The one for science is at Rationalism. Hey, Rationalism! Still pretty awesome in Civ 6. It's not just Civilization 5. But there's also Liberalism, +1 amenities in all cities with at least 2 specialty districts. Oh, well, I've got all these commercial hubs and campuses. Hey, they're my 2 specialty districts. And I'm continuing to grow, and people are looking for amenities, and maybe that means I can delay spending time constructing an entertainment district, let alone perhaps then a subsequent building in that, if I can get an additional amenity. You know, it's like, I need this other amenity until I can take over this next city, or to get that additional amenity, or settle this next city, or be able to find someone to trade an amenity with. And then industrial, diplomatic. +2 science, culture, faith, and gold from each city-state you are suzerain of. You know, the nice thing is you can get the benefits, we've talked about this before, at 1 envoy, 3 envoy, and 6 envoy, and so long as you're not at war with that city-state, and that city-state still exists, which of course means, you know, don't play with Phil.
Yeah, go ahead, run that policy card. Go ahead.
But this one, +2 science, culture, faith, and gold from each city-state you're a suzerain of. Okay, let's say for a moment that that's 5, and that's really high. That's +10 science, +10 culture, +10 faith, and +10 gold. It's the industrial era. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Too little, too late there. Elsewise, an industrial for economic. There's stuff for increased wonder production, builder production, and builder builds. Additional gold for cities not on your capital's continent. There is market economy. Your international trade routes provide +1 gold per luxury and strategic resource improved at the destination, plus a +2 culture and a +2 science.
Internal trade routes. Internal trade routes.
You're going to have to really pay attention to the map in that case.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be ahead for this most of the time. It's very situational. There really isn't anything.
You usually find a better policy slot than that.
Yep. There really is nothing industrial economic that makes me jump up and down for joy. It's like, oh, good. I've reached this. So it's an accomplishment. I've researched the civic. I can continue on to find something else that's a little more useful. Industrial in terms of military. I mean, we've got something in here for additional production towards industrial modern era melee and ranged units, military academies and seaports and science, pillaging yields.
You get an upgrade on your unit maintenance. You can take multiple war weariness reduction policies if you just want to end the game. The ones I run the most frequently in industrial when I make it there are less maintenance, faster movement of starting a friendly territory, because that does count in territory that you just took a city. If you play around that, you can get a substantial bonus between that and the Great General. It's pretty impressive, actually. And then just you don't take war weariness because you're having it, in essence.
Diplomatic and modern. Okay.
Yeah.
I got to point this out simply because why am I adopting a policy that is specifically, it has a specific negative. Not just the negative because you chose a different policy over it. Police ideology. Enemy spies level reduced by 2 in your lands. However, all cities suffer -1 amenity. No. No. Enemy spy levels reduced by 2 in your lands. Period. Cut this other crap out. Why would I choose that? Not just for the positive as compared to what else you can get for diplomatic policies that are available before even, but why would I do this? Why would I give myself an amenity hit on top of it? I mean, yeah, enemy spies, if they're really pushing in your cities, they can be an issue, but I think there are better ways to deal with enemy spies.
I don't think it's a 1 amenity in every city issue.
Yeah. They would need to be a lot more oppressive than they are before you would use that.
Like, if you had Bert flipping going on, then maybe.
Yeah, that's about the only point where we'd go, yeah, no.
Arsenal of Democracy, your trade routes to ally cities provide +2 food and +2 production for both cities. It's the modern era?
Yeah.
Given what else you can be taking, and if you really want to have more food and more production for your cities, there are other and better ways than adopting this policy. Gunboat Diplomacy, which I actually like, oh, I remember that from Civ 5 policy as well. But here, open borders with all city-states and +4 influence points per turn towards earning envoys. The open borders with all city-states is amusing, but I can think of another way to open borders.
Declare war?
With all city-states, yeah. I actually enjoy that. I'm going to open borders with all city-states, and then I'm going to get +4 influence points per turn towards earning envoys. And it's like, well, when I think about what open borders means to me, if I really need to get through the city-state to get somewhere, which has happened before, I'll just make my own path. And of course, then in that case, I'm not really concerned about influence points at that point, combined with also, you know, it's the modern era.
Or even if everybody starts going, oh, you're a warmonger afterwards.
Yeah, there is that. Modern era economic, however, +4 food from domestic trade routes. I mean, there's the production boost, but then there's also the food boost as well. One copy of strategic resource allows you to produce and purchase units requiring it in any city under resource management. That can be helpful. You can just have an encampment, and you probably do have an encampment anyway, so I don't know why I would be adopting that economic policy. Again, swapping out something that I already have. And there's also this +4 housing, +2 amenities, and -8 gold to all cities with at least 3 specialty districts. Here's another policy where you're actually getting a negative. At that particular point in the game, I'm not certain I'm that concerned about housing and amenities.
Maybe if you're desperate for amenities, maybe.
Yeah.
It's a tough sell, though. That can be, like, if you have 30 cities or something, that can be a lot of amenities. Ooh. And you might have the gold at that point.
And it also depends on your cities, because your cities need at least 3 specialty districts, so...
You only need +7 for that. That's not hard to attain in even, like, pseudo-core cities.
I'm not so much talking about the pop to achieve, but actually being able to construct the districts.
Yeah, that's easy. That's routine, though. Like, if you're doing major domination games, you're cycling trade routes. And so you can set up newer cities by putting at least 2 trade routes in them so that they have decent production on the districts. And then once they have the districts up, you can do that with then even more trade routes in future cities. And it's just an outward spiral. Rate of growth does not increase at the same rate. You don't get exponential growth in terms of city conquest rate the same way that you have all these trade routes. You won't capture 10 new cities because you have 10 more trade routes. You actually get faster production if you're doing that, and then you can leave some trade routes behind. In practice, it's super easy to get that many cities up to 7 pop with 3 districts if you are going commercial hub and industrial as 2 of them, and then just pick whatever the hell you want for the third one. That's really easy to cycle and get runaway and like game empires. And if you're going to do that, then that's something you can consider running.
You could.
If amenities are a problem, then you might as well. You're going to have the money, trust me. So
yeah.
I would hopefully prefer that the cities that you are settling, where you're first off, it's going to have at least an amenity that you're going to be able to gain for your empire number one. I mean, I can certainly see it helping, as you're saying, with the amenities, but if the amenities are going to be that bad in certain cities, and then you're concerned about uprising, and you're willing to swap out, say, from getting +100% yield from all of your commercial hub district buildings, that's a particular quagmire you've put yourself in.
I would swap that out. I'd swap something else out, or wild card this or something.
Yeah.
It's true that you'll have more wild cards to deal with, but
We're talking pretty late game here with a lot of cities and a lot of things you could get away with cutting. If you're just doing mass conquest, that kind of thing can be helpful. It's niche, but it's there.
I mean, yes, there's the growth issue, but it's like, oh my gosh, I'm going to spawn a whole bunch of, you know, freaking rebels. It's like, well, I'll just...
Look at it this way. You're paying out a substantial amount of money for what can amount to having, like... 10's maybe a bit extreme, but I mean, it can be something like having 10 extra luxury resources if you're really huge, or at least 5+. That's just not trivial, necessarily. I mean, yeah, you're paying for it, but not too many alternative sources of that do not take up district slots that you can get so easily And it's not even something you have to run permanently. Maybe you're just having trouble with lore exhaustion, so you swap something else out and leave that in until you're done.
Yeah.
It's okay. I mean I'm not saying you should run it all the time, but it's something you might actually use sometimes, depending.
It might be, but if it's from war exhaustion, there are two policies that give you a 25% reduction in war weariness, which is, I tend to be the biggest issue when it comes to people being upset that, oh my gosh, we're low on amenities and now people are going to start revolting. That yeah. You talk about swapping for a wild card. I often find that one of my wild cards would go along with one of my military are those two policies.
I don't know. I'm running fascism, and I've got both two right in the military, along with the maintenance one and something else. I could bring that down as a wild card if I really needed it. I usually don't. But this is like you're keeping all the cities you're conquering, too, and you just want to go massive sprawling empire, crushing everybody. It's fun, at least if the game doesn't fight you so much. It's the reason I don't do it very much lately.
So then the military modern policies, and we talked about the war weariness ones, that's both martial law and propaganda, but they do stack, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And this is also when we now have the unit's maintenance reduced by 2 gold at levée en masse. There's some other stuff in there about production towards units, or known weariness from combat in your territory. Just very situational, which ones you more likely going to use than not. And then at the information era, for diplomatic, we've got International Space Agency, plus 10% science for each city-state you're the suzerain of, or plus 10 culture for the per city-state you're suzerain of at collective activism. You are suzerain of. I guess if you really need that last push, and you're a suzerain of half a dozen or more, seeing as how, you know, it's... That, yeah, okay. That could be good for
does
a final
push. Does this
count
if you own the city? Yeah, let's just conquer the city. The city state, and then you own the city. I think you're going to get more total yield from the city if you own it directly than this can give you, or even the base city state can give you, usually.
Yeah, it would mostly depend on how much science or culture you're actually outputting as to if that would be valuable or more so to take over the city state.
And I guess if you're an immense empire and the city-state's giving you per city, you might keep it around, I guess.
And then also, if you're the suzerain of a whole bunch of city-states, then that bonus, I would guess, would stack, so you get 10% extra for each one of them.
Well, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but then also at the same time, it's the information era, and what are you getting a boost on? Either science or culture, so you're pretty close to the end of the tech tree, or the civics tree by that point. And what more do you really need to be able to
this
research to get what it is that you want to do? That's yes, there's the atomic era, but there are no atomic era diplomatic policies. So we'll combine atomic and information because there's so few anyway, even at the economic and the military tiers. Economic, atomic, stuff for great works of art and artifacts and music. So yeah, if you're going to for a cultural victory, sure. Including the theater district adjacency bonuses, plus 100%, sure. Information era, economic policies. There's one for plus 5 production and plus 10 gold from international trade routes, and plus 50% tourism to civilizations to which you have a trade route. So yeah, that tourism thing, again, culture victory, that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really geared towards culture. Military-wise, atomic, plus 50% towards space race projects if a city has either a military academy or a seaport. So yeah, considering how much production you are going to need, as we've already established, again, going for a space race, you really should be looking at this. There's also stuff towards atomic and information era melee and ranged units. So, you know, Phil would love this, obviously. Strategic Air Force, plus 50% production towards information era air units and towards all carriers. Situational.
Oh, the Australian summer update, now on Linux and Mac. There you go.
Enjoyed in the announcement on the Aspire support page. In all caps, so they're yelling at you. Cross-platform versus PC is not yet available.
Just in case you weren't sure about that. Hurry, it's not ready yet!
Steam Mac players are encouraged to join the Mac Steam Civilization 6 group here to get your multiplayer fix in the meantime. But yeah. I guess they don't really care about Linux players because there's apparently no group that they've organized for the Linux players, so...
Yeah, apparently not.
There must not be a big enough group, or maybe Mac and Linux are compatible with one another or something?
I don't know. Maybe.
It's implied, or it could just be poor writing, when they say cross-platform versus PC. Yeah, maybe Mac and Linux can talk to each other.
There's some strange interactions there with the cross-platform, for sure. Because I noticed it when I was trying to get EU4 to work in cross-platform. And if you run it native on Steam, it doesn't. It doesn't work. You desync in in-game days on a scale of 377 years. You will desync inside of 1 month. But if you run it through Wine to make it pretend that it's running on Windows, for some reason that magically works. And you can connect to PC people just fine. Like, what the hell? You might want to experiment around a little bit there if you are a Linux user. But yeah, basically, at this point, they still pay lip service to actually supporting the other platforms properly, unfortunately. And that goes for both Mac and Linux.
There's a Civ 6 demo now available.
Oh, now the game's been out how long?
That's the, like, really guys comment? Absolutely. What are you guys doing?
I'm sure pretty much anybody who's listening to this, for the most part, will already have purchased Civilization VI and would not need the demo.
Well, maybe they want to, like, show their friends the demo.
They're unable to convince other people to purchase Civ 6, and now that they're listening to the show, they can go tell those people who don't listen to this show, hey, the demo's available now.
But you'd think the demo would be out before the game.
Or at least at the same time.
Yeah, so you can, like, try before you buy, but no.
I can understand it not being before because, like, we're trying to finish the game. But now we're releasing the game and the demo at the same time.
But that doesn't mesh with the modern gaming industry practice, which is buy before you try.
Yeah.
If they were trying to fit in with the modern gaming practice, there wouldn't even be a demo, so...
No, there wasn't for a long time.
You get to play as China on a fixed map with America, Egypt, and Samaria. You've got 60 turns in which to do it. And tying into the most previous topic, comments on Steam. No Linux demo. Where's the Civ 6 Mac demo? No, come on. Why would you expect the Linux and Mac demo to be out at the same time? Come on. That's ridiculous.
We don't even get versions of the game at the same time. Why do you expect the demo to be at the same time?
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
It was a compliment, Dino. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you can take it as an insult if you want, but that's...
No,
that's
Dino doesn't know how to take a compliment. Fact. Facted it on the internet.
Dan's facting on the internet. Somebody stop him.
I'm not going to insult myself, so I'm with Dan here. So. Anyway, thank you for joining us on Polycast episode 277. I'm the Mian team, and I've been joined by Dan Q.
Stream this.
Makalua.
Stream of coffee.
Global warming god magic.
Global warming.
And guest co-host Dino Yoshi.
I thought it was spring already.
Nike's fan agrees.
That would be a good fix for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once again, Max's then, fan knows what it's talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Then,
thank you, Mackie fan. I appreciate your support.
Yeah, fan, tell us how you really feel.
Yep.
Snowflakes, cold to the touch, warm to the heart.
You sure you don't have that back to front?
No.
That was even better than the awkward silence. Thank you, Aggie.
My brain went to Polycast After Dark.
Record date?
March 18th, 2017.
Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips. Copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.